Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic. I'm really nervous. I actually just moved from New York about a month ago, and I thought I didn't know anyone, really, in AA. But about 5 minutes before the meeting, I guess I knew the wrong person, story of my life. Always fall in with the wrong people. And Mark, who I think just the world of, asked me to speak, so I said I'd do it. So forgive me if I start blabbering. My sobriety date is June 12th of 2013. I'm actually going to start at the beginning of the story. I relapsed, and we'll get into that, but that's my current sobriety date. As I said, I'm from New York. I grew up in a small town in Westchester County, which is a little bit north of the city. Neither of my parents are alcoholics. I'm an only child. Someone, when I first came in, they told me Bill was an only child. I'm no historian. I don't know if that's true. But when they told me that, I was like, ah, there we go. It's my parents' fault. I knew it. You know, because that was my way. I blamed other people. But there was nothing wrong with my childhood. I had a great childhood. I didn't want for anything. I grew up in a nice town. Sorry, I have allergies, too. Small suburban town. I do remember, I was talking to my best friend from growing up a couple nights ago. She's like, remember when you used to make me order your pizza for you? I'm like, order my pizza? No, I don't remember that. She goes, yeah, because you were scared of the guy, you were scared of the guy at the pizza place, so I had to order and pay for you. I'm like, oh yeah, I do kind of remember that, yeah. I was like, that was until I was 16. So I definitely had that fear growing up all the time. I didn't realize other people didn't feel that way. And one thing I do need to say is I didn't drink in high school. I didn't drink at all. I was talking to someone the other night. I was like, God, you know, I always wish I'd started drinking at like 12, like everyone else. Then I would have just really plummeted more quickly, and I would have gotten sober long before I did. But that is not my story. I did very well in high school. I went to a small liberal arts school in Massachusetts, and that was the first time I drank. It was peach schnapps. I honestly just remember sitting on my friend's floor drinking it. I felt like crap the next day, and I wanted to do it again. It's a similar story that we hear in here. I remember one time very clearly standing in the middle of the quad in college and telling my friend, like kind of spinning around and saying, God, I really wish you had a drink to be sober. She was like, what? I was like, I wish I was drunk all the time, and if I wanted to be sober, then I would have to drink like, you know, 12 beers. She was like, that's kind of weird, Lisa. And I didn't think so. I didn't think so at all. I had a nickname in college. It was Bev, short for beverage. No joke. For my 21st birthday, my roommates got me, I don't know, they were big in New York. It was like link bracelets with the charm from Tiffany's. My charm said Bev. I had a Tiffany bracelet that said Bev, short for beverage. But, you know, I never thought I had a problem in college. I drank two nights a week. I remember I always, I would try and get my work done, you know, before the big parties or the big nights to go out so I wouldn't, you know, have any problems school-wise. It never occurred to me that I had a problem, and I should back up. My parents, like I said, are not alcoholics. I have a really small family. I have one uncle who is an alcoholic. We didn't talk about it. He was sober before I was born, relapsed when I was around 16. No one talked about it. But I knew my mom and dad really didn't like my uncle. My mom told me later, Lisa, if you only knew, he put a cigarette out in my plate at my wedding. I'm like, he's a damn alcoholic. That's all he did. That's what you pissed at him? Like, jeez. But, you know, I after college, I worked in advertising. You know, continued to drink. I think it became a problem when I went to business school a couple years later. We had happy hours. I would get really, really drunk and, like, say embarrassing things to people. And I remember I was dating this guy, and he goes to me, he's like, you know, this woman I'm friends with, she was like, you know, your girlfriend, she's really cool, except, God, she drinks so much wine, and she becomes a real idiot. And you know what I said back? She's jealous. She's jealous. She was obviously she's jealous. It just never occurred to me. You know, it was that feeling of, you know, I would get very angry if someone accused me of drinking too much. During business school, I met a man I became engaged to, and I remember we lived together before we were engaged. He worked longer hours. He was in banking. He worked longer hours, and I remember sitting, calling him, hey, you coming home? When are you going to be home? Because I can order dinner. I didn't give a shit. Excuse me. I didn't give a crap when he came home. I just wanted to know when I had to clean up my little, like, at-home party for before, or, you know, call my drug dealer or whatever. I remember after we got engaged, my friend came over to borrow an outfit from me, and she's, like, going through my closet, and in the bottom, she opened some drawer, and she's like, Lisa, you have, like, bottles of empty wine in here. I was like, do I? She's like, yeah, why? Oh, that's the bottle of wine. That's the bottle of wine Dan and I drank the night we got engaged. She goes, how many times did you get engaged? There's like 12 bottles. but it was just a constant game of hiding and you know, concealing my drinking, trying to make everything look okay on the outside. It was tiring. And I remember one time the guy said to me, he said, you know, Lisa, some people are functioning alcoholics. I said, I'm so glad for them. I don't know what to say about that. I was really sensitive about how much I drank. Whether or not I knew I had a problem at that point, I don't know. I have to assume somewhere in my heart I did. So during that time, drugs are part of my story, and I bring this up only because it was kind of an instrumental part of my story. It was around Thanksgiving, and I was off the next day. And anytime I was off, I'd try and be really controlled. You know, I'd only get really wasted if I thought I could, like, you know, I'd only start drinking if I could really afford to be screwed up the next day. And I remember I had a day off, and, like, what are you going to do? I mean, you get off work, you have a day off the next day. Like, what are you going to do? I'm going to drink, you know? And I told him, so I started drinking. I was really drunk, and I called my drug dealer, and I told him, you know, I told the guy I was in the apartment, and I had a think of an excuse to leave. So I was like, I'm going to go around the corner and I'm going to go have some pizza. He's like, oh, bring me back a slice. No, I'm going to eat it there. Lisa, no one eats pizza in the dingy pizza parlor on the corner of like 10th Avenue. Why? I do. So, you know, I run out to meet my dealer, and at some point I get in the car, and it's a different guy than I'm used to seeing, and my fiance starts calling me, so I push the decline button. And I'm like, I'm talking to the guy. I'm like, you cool? I haven't seen you before. I don't really know you. He's like, yeah, I'm good. Whatever, we do the exchange. And I get back up to the apartment, and my fiance's like, give me your drugs. And instead of declining the call, I'd answered it, and he had heard everything. So that wedding didn't happen. And, you know, it probably would have been a good time for me to stop what I was doing, but I didn't. My career was going well. I didn't know, you know, how much people knew, and I kind of just kept going along. I just remember being so tired and sick all the time. I was constantly scared if someone would come close to my face at work. I was terrified they were going to smell alcohol on me. I remember my boss was one time like, I got something in my eye. Can you get, and I'm like, yeah, I can look. She's like, get closer. I'm like, I don't see anything. I was terrified if she got close to my face, she would smell alcohol. And I remember a day I walked into a meeting room, and the entire room stunk like alcohol. Like, I walked in, it was a conference room, and I was like, oh, who in this office do I need to be friends with? And then I realized it was like flu season in New York, and they had put hand sanitizer in the meeting rooms, which makes it smell like alcohol. I was like, oh. So for the next, like, 2 years, I walked around with hand sanitizer. I'm like, this is perfect. If someone smells, I'll be like, oh, sorry, you know, and I would all the time. People thought I was a germaphobe because I always had the hand sanitizer in case I smelled like alcohol. And I walked around with that hand sanitizer for years after I got sober. I have no idea why, but I had started this lie that I was a germaphobe, and I couldn't get out of it. I had to switch jobs. Like, it was, you know, and these are the, and I mean, lying, it's a huge part. I'm constantly lying. I mean, I couldn't at some point get, you know, keep track of all my lies. Around that time, after I left my fiance, I drank too much one night, and I overdosed on Xanax. I have no idea why a doctor gave me Xanax, but they did. And I ended up in Bellevue. Bellevue in New York is not a nice place. There are convicts to the left of me, convicts to the right of me. You know, the doctor came in and they were going to put me in a psychiatric ward. I was like, No. And at some point, one of my girlfriends came in. She's like, oh, no, we got to, like, get out of here. I'm like, oh, my God, someone understands me. And I go to the doctor. I'm like, I need to go to work tomorrow. I have a job. This constant specialness, like this terminal uniqueness. He's like, well, who's going to do your job if you died because you tried to commit suicide? You just don't understand me. I need to get to work. Well, I ended up in a mental institution for 2 weeks. They did indicate my blood alcohol content was quite high, and perhaps I should start attending AA meetings. I have 5 minutes. Anyway, shortly thereafter I realized, you know, it was time. And one night I walked to a meeting a block away from me. I remember it was pouring, like it does here every day. And I was trying to open the door. I couldn't open the door. There was a girl standing outside smoking. And I kind of looked at her. I was like, she was like, goes like this. I'm like, oh, what that means. She's like, push the button, and she pulled the door open for me, and she walked in with me, and she ended up becoming my sponsor. And, I owe her my life, and I'm just going to skip ahead for a second. And someone once told me that, you know, even when people in the program let you down, the program does not let you down. And it's been something I've kind of kept in my heart. And it's funny because, you know, the same way Jamie saved my life in New York, someone sitting in the front row did the same thing for me when I came into Tampa. I was sitting by myself. I had relapsed shortly before leaving New York. I'd only been sober a couple weeks. And I sat back there in the corner by myself. And I said, God, please don't let anyone talk to me. Please. I don't care if it helps you stay sober. Do not talk to me. She came up to me. And she's now my sponsor. And I'm just, you know, that's kind of the way this program works. And, you know, I'll quickly say when I relapsed, I stopped going to meetings. I had a job, a good job. And what I told myself was, well, Lisa, if you lose your job, you're definitely going to drink. So, you know, it's okay to skip a meeting here and there because, you know, if you lose your job, you're definitely going to drink. If you don't go to a meeting, you might not. But here's the thing, I did. And we hear it all the time, but it is so true. I'm so grateful that I came back because I know a lot of people that haven't. I've learned that I can never again let anything interfere with my sobriety. It is no joke. During that time, right after I relapsed, I shared this once before, but I remember I was watching TV and the CEO of Yahoo was speaking. And, you know, they were criticizing her because, you know, she had gone back to work shortly after maternity leave. I have no idea how long she took, but I'm telling you, I have no kids. It sounded really short. It sounded like, you know, the amount of time, like, you know, I'd stopped shopping. It was like a couple weeks. And she said, you know, whatever people think about me, here are my priorities. God, family, Yahoo. And at that time when I was, you know, struggling to make sure I was, you know, doing everything at work, I realized if this woman puts God first, she's running Yahoo, Lisa Monahan has to remember to put God first. And when I stopped doing that, that's where everything fell apart. And, you know, I'll close by saying I've worked the steps. I'm doing it again. I rely heavily on the people in this program. Both here and at home. Well, this is home. Both home and in New York. I've learned to call them when I need them, and that they don't think I'm weird for calling. And I pray, and it's not something I was always good at. Actually, it's something I'm still not good at. Sometimes I feel like when I'm talking to God, it's like when I was talking to a guy for the first time. I'm like, hey, what's up? You know? And I'm like that awkwardness, I do. I'm like, not sure what I'm supposed to say. But, you know, I feel like no one's listening, and I have to do it, and I have to say what's in my heart. And when I do it, it always makes me feel better, and it always ends up okay in the end. So thank you to Mark for asking me to speak. and thank you guys for being just so welcoming. I'm just so proud to be part of this group.